You're listening to Hidden Mysteries Radio, discussing the topics no one else dares to. Good evening, everybody. This is Hidden Mysteries Radio for, well, I guess it's going to be August the 1st. We're recording on the 31st, but the show will post at 1. How you doing, Ghost?
The year is disappearing faster than I want it to.
Well, yeah, the year is disappearing fast, but I'll sure be glad when the summer heat disappears.
If you had a friendly Jewish guy, he'd hold that sun still for us.
Yeah. Well, that's true. It says in the Talmud that when a rabbi argues with God, God has to listen. But anyhow, been a lot of interesting developments out there this week. Last week, we talked a little bit about Cuckservative, the hashtag that's been trending on Twitter. It was already a big blown-up thing, but boy, has it really blown up this week. The hungry young stormtroopers of the alternative right have been performing a blitzkrieg on the mainstream Republicans, rhinos, whatever they used to be called. Now they're called cuckservatives. And they are shaking in their little red boots, let me tell you.
With their little red flags.
With their little red flags. With their
sickle on them.
Yeah, with their little yellow sickle on them. The little Trotskyist cuckservatives.
And their little $2 American flag pin with the eight stripes.
Yeah, but we're having all this going on. I mean, the thing is just trending huge. You should see the graphs of how the hashtag has just suddenly spiked through the roof. And your friendly neighborhood Asmodor here has been right in the middle of the thing. I've been doing this for quite some time myself, and my comrades on Twitter, we have been using this thing for a long time. We'd call people cuck when they would advocate policies that hurt our people and that kind of thing. And we even started using the cuckservative thing before.
If you keep it up, it's going to be just as popular as Santorum.
Oh, it's way more popular than Santorum. Way more popular than it ever was. I've never seen anything like this. And the thing is, it strikes such fear into the heart of the cuckservative when you come along. They've tried to come up with a lot of, horseshit, to put it bluntly, to try to stall the thing off. They claim that it's motivated by nothing but racism and homophobia just the typical leftist canards. And every time they do that stuff, they are reinforcing the fact that they are indeed cuckservatives. But like I said, the thing's just exploded. There are several websites that have galleries just for the memes, and I'll post links to a few of them. But the memes just kill them, and yours truly has made probably about 10% of them. But they all point out some absolutely true stuff, and they couch it in the metaphorical language of the cuckold, you know. Like, for instance, there's one, I didn't make this one, there's one out there that's got a picture of Ted Cruz smirking on it, and it says, "Hi, I'm Ted Cruz. I want to increase legal immigration by 500% and flood the United States with Hindu and Paki hordes to take all the tech jobs, because I'm opposed to training Americans to do them, I would rather Americans work in big box stores or be unemployed. But hey, vote for me because I stand with Israel. I mean, it's got hashtag cuckservative under it, or one with a picture of Rick Perry, that says, if you're concerned about, your demographic displacement, you're a Nazi. You know, that's what they throw at us constantly. You're a Nazi. If you care about white people, you're a Nazi. If you care about, American sovereignty, you're a Nazi.
Is that what Perry said?
He said similar things. Yeah. The stuff is coming so hard and fast. It's hard to tell which things were actually said and which things are paraphrased. But, the cuckservative memes are not intended for the most part to be actual quotes. They are summations of the positions that these guys hold, and they're all mixed up with the responses that run-of-the-mill cuckservatives on social media try to throw back at you. I mean, and among some of the other crazy stuff, there are big cuckservative users who have tried to plant the seed out there that all of us who are tweeting about cuckservative and writing about cuckservative and talking about it, that we're Democrat operatives from the Democrat Party who are doing this to divide the Republicans, or that we're all rabid Trump supporters, and that's why we're doing it. This is all Donald Trump's fault that this cuckservative thing came out. It's almost like, you know, the stereotype of the black guy who got caught wiping the blood off of his knife after he killed somebody in a back alley, and the police pull up on him and they say, "Hey, what are you doing?" He says, "I didn't do nothing." Well, that's exactly, you know, it might be a stereotype what I'm talking about, but it's not a stereotype with the cuckservatives. They will never, ever.
After the Sarah Palin affair, what, anybody doubt it?
Well, they have never, ever admitted that they have brought this on themselves, with a few notable exceptions. Well, the ones who will admit that they brought it on themselves most likely aren't actually cuckservative. They're probably just conservative, you know. But interestingly enough, there's been a lot of support for the term coming from Breitbart, which I find that, you know, I find that really odd, since Breitbart's run by one of the most rabid shills on earth for Israel, Ben Shapiro. We've talked about him a lot of times on here. And, of course, he's not the one writing any of these articles. But, you know, that they've basically supported it and talked about how funny it is and how accurate it is and all that. And the other funny thing is, there are so many of these cuckservatives who, when they find out about the hashtag, they'll say, "Oh, hey, that sounds great." And they'll come jump into our timelines wanting to troll the cuckservatives too, because like they don't like John McCain, or they don't like Mitt Romney, but they think Ted Cruz and Rick Perry and Rand Paul and all are great. They think we must support them. And when we immediately point out to them that they are cuckservatives and we start trolling them about it, oh my God, it's another Shoah. As a matter of fact, I've got, I consider it one of my greatest accolades on Twitter ever. I'm pulling this up right now. Sorry, everybody. I wasn't prepared for this. I didn't have this window open. But here it is. I'll embed this tweet on the website. It's funny. It's some woman who did exactly what I'm talking about, named Flo Hill. She came into the TL wanting to troll the cuckservatives, and it turned out she was a big Ted Cruz, Rand Paul person. And in very short order, as they all do, she had blocked me and run away, and then tweeted about me thinking I wouldn't be able to see it. And here's the tweet. This is the one I say is my greatest Twitter accolade. It says, "Asmodor is a troll and an idiot. Block him if you want to not get a heart attack from his moronic behavior."
How many words were misspelled?
Well, I'll have to give her, I have to give her credit. None. But, I mean, you know, if 10 tweets from me about cuckservatives can cause a person And her avatar is the elephant that's the colors of the American flag, you know, the GOP logo. If a person with the GOP logo for their avatar says that your friendly neighborhood Asmodor will give you a heart attack if you don't block him, I think that tells you a little something. Well, of course, it tells you a whole lot about my world-class skills. But it tells you even more about the power of the cuckservative hashtag. What do you think, Ghost?
Well, it sounds like you found a niche there that seems to fit. I'm looking up some of the synonyms on that word, and yellow belly seems to come to mind. All these do. Pennywaste.
Yeah.
Cream puff. Wolf. Coward. Mama's boy.
Yeah.
I like the one Daisy.
Yeah.
Oh, you're nothing but a Daisy Republican.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is you know, in the world of sexual degenerates and swingers and all that stuff, there's a lot of terminology that goes around that revolves around the whole cuckold fetish. And one of them, and it's one that I use more often than any to throw at them, is called prepping the bull. When you're a cuckold in the cuckold fetish, you sit in the corner and you watch while your wife has sex with another guy. And the other guy is the bull. He's the one who, can satisfy your wife. Well, the bull has to be prepped, you see. And that term comes from agriculture, where when you, have a breeding bull that you want to breed with a whole bunch of different cows, the rancher will sometimes have to prep the bull, which means that he'll have to, manually excite the bull. So prepping the bull in cuckoldry means performing hand service or oral service on the bull before he mounts the wife. And when these guys start shooting back at us that we're Nazis or that Mexicans are natural conservatives or that we don't have a heart, America's for everybody, it's a melting pot, and if you're worried about if you're voting out of interest of white people, I don't want to talk to you and all that. That's when you tell them, hey, prep that bull, boy, and you throw some more of the memes at them. But like I say, yeah, it's been one of the greatest things. And one of the things that's so great about it is that, even though it has all these funny, jokish, racial and sexual connotations to it, which are absolutely appropriate considering what's, you know, been going on for the last 30, 40 years, at least with the, mainstream politics, and for at least 25 years with the Republican Party. They apply it, but there's so much, intellectual and philosophical depth behind the thing. And it reminds me in a way of the mantra. You remember the mantra, Ghost? We talked about that way back on the show we did about white genocide. Well, the thing about the mantra was that so many of the points that the mantra makes and that are peripheral to the mantra, the thing that made them so powerful was that they are irrefutable. Like, you know, points like diversity. When a neighborhood has too many white people, people say it's not diverse enough. But when a neighborhood has hardly any or no white people, people say that it's diverse. In other words, diversity means less white people. And, you know, when you point stuff out like that, whether a person thinks it's good or bad, that stuff's absolutely true, and they get real butthurt. They don't want that stuff spreading around, so they come up, all they can do is hit you with these leftist canards, Nazi, KKK, you want to kill 6 million Jews, all that stuff. And it's the same thing with this one, but what's really cool about this one is, like I said, it took off so fast, and the reason it took off so fast is because the cuckservatives themselves are so stupid. They live in their little frame where, you know, if a cuckservative is sitting around a table having a political discussion and there's an aggressive liberal at the table who starts shouting racist or bigot or something like that, they just fold up and go away. And they expected that to work with us. A call us racist, homophobes, and they expect us to run off, and we don't. We double down. And I don't see anything but good coming out of this. And the other thing that they throw at us, and this stuff goes, it's as old, it goes all the way back to 1990, 91, that election cycle when Perot was running his third party. They say, oh, all you people are going to do is divide the Republican Party and hand a victory over to Hillary. Well, if the only choice we've got is a conservative or Hillary, that's fine with me, because when they get Hillary in there, and that will just bring the crisis to a head, and it will wake people up a whole lot faster. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think about that, Ghost?
Well, I don't know if it'll wake them up any faster, but it's sure going to wake the Republican Party up.
Well, will it? Because, I mean, they have...
they've already manhandled the Tea Party out of existence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, and that's another thing is that they try to do is... The morons try to conflate conservative with teabagger. Now, teabagger.
That's a sexual term.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely a sexual.
Means true with a centaurum.
Well, yeah. But, teabagger is, though it is a sexual term, it's just an empty term. All that it is, it's basically like calling somebody a fag because you disagree with them.
Cigarette, yeah.
Yeah. Because all that it means is, the left didn't like the Tea Party, and the mainstream conservatives didn't like the Tea Party, but this is really a leftist thing. And so the leftists.
The Koch brothers loved them.
Right. And so
loved
the.
Them out of existence.
Yeah, the Koch conservatives. But anyway, the Koch conservative brothers. But, teabagger thing has no depth to it whatsoever. There's nothing that. The act of teabag, you know what the act of teabagging is, right, Ghost?
Well, I know.
Okay. What do you want me to tell the folks?
I imagine they should know by now. It's been okay. All over the place.
All right. Well, then I'll listen, if you don't know what teabagging is, go to Urban Dictionary and put in teabagging.
I say you ought to just put the definition in the post.
Okay. I will. All right. Anyway.
No pictures.
Uh-huh. Well, anyhow. The teabagger had nothing.
Teabagger for one lifetime.
Yeah, but like I say, teabagger is just an empty insult. I mean, it might be funny, and it might have offended a lot of the Tea Party people, but it never took off, and it never scared anybody. And the reason it didn't is because, like I said, it's just an empty insult. But the cuckservative thing, I mean, it hits the bullseye like Robin Hood. I mean, it's
nothing more a finer example of cuckservative is when. Sarah Palin took over the presidential election and forced McCain into the background, and he lost.
Well,
that's not the only reason he lost, but
well, I tell you,
perfect example of those cuckolds.
I don't want to vote for either one of them, but if somebody put a gun to my head and said you have to vote for John McCain or Sarah Palin, I think I'd have to bite the bullet and vote for Sarah. But I mean, John McCain, Sarah Palin is a dilettante, no question about it, a complete dilettante. But,
I call her a dullard.
Yeah. But John McCain is a lot worse than that. John McCain is a traitor. He's absolutely a traitor. He's a traitor to his nation. He's a traitor to his government. And he's a traitor to his race.
And he's a traitor to his citizens of Arizona.
Oh, absolutely. I don't, how do they, you know, this is one of the things.
They meander the lines every time the Republicans get the state house.
Yeah. But one of the things that I've always wondered about. Yeah, but it doesn't matter what the lines are because he's elected to the Senate. He's not coming from a House district. And same thing with Lindsey Graham. He's the other one I was going to point out. You know, John McCain is in Arizona, which is, the citizens of Arizona, that's not conservative territory. That's conservative territory. And the same thing with South Carolina. For the most part, it's not the citizens as far as just the average voter on the street. They're not conservatives. They're conservatives. But how do they keep electing in Arizona John McCain and in South Carolina Lindsey Graham? It's one of these things that makes you think.
The party chooses who may run and not the people who choose who run.
Well, they choose them in the primary.
Right. The party does it.
Well, yeah, but.
And they make the rules and they can make them manipulate them any way they want.
Well, I know that's correct because I, you know, as our regular listeners already know, you know, I've been a delegate. A precinct chairman, a delegate for Ron Paul, I didn't do it in 2012. I did it in 2008. And it is unbelievable the shenanigans that they get up to at these, at the county conventions and the state conventions when all the Ron Paul delegates roll in and they realize, oh my God, this guy might get the nomination. I mean, they, like, I can't remember which state it was. It may have been Arizona, back in 2012. It was somewhere out west and they, it was either Arizona or Nevada. Now that I'm saying it, it might well have been Nevada. That's Sheldon Adelson territory. But they canceled or rescheduled their convention because all the Ron Paul delegates, well, you know, they felt like they were being bum-rushed, but they were only being bum-rushed because the people running the convention didn't like Ron Paul, but all the delegates showing up, the majority of them were Ron Paul delegates, and it scared them so bad that they shut the convention down. They had everybody run out of there. They rescheduled it, and when they rescheduled it, they'd come up with a whole new set of rules. And every rule that they wrote was done to exclude Ron Paul. And that was at the same time that they were doing the debates, and he got excluded from one or two of the debates. Remember when they had like the 11 candidates?
Oh, of course.
And anyway, which brings me to another point that I want to make here. I was thinking about this today. I was listening to one of the excellent parody songs from the guys over at therightstuff.biz that do the Daily Show. And the parody song was called Goys in the Hood. And there was one line in it where the guy says that, you know, We've changed from ANCAPs to statists. And I was talking to you about this before the show goes, you know, all these conservatives that want to label us as, KKK, neo-Nazis and all that stuff, racist, they seem to have this idea in their head. It's the same idea that these, progressive slash leftist slash Marxist, whatever the hell they are, people on the, left have about this, you know, if you don't like this policy or that policy, you're racist or whatever. Their idea of where these ideas come from, these opinions come from, and viewpoints, is that somehow we were raised to hate, or we just, there's something the matter at with us that we just look at somebody whose skin is a different color and we automatically hate them, you know, and it just absolutely ridiculous stuff. And when I heard the guy come off with that line, I knew I had to bring that up tonight, is that, you know, I was absolutely a libertarian a couple of years ago, and was for many years before that, and not a libertarian like they have now. This libertarianism that they have now is, it's just pure leftism. It's been completely co-opted. And not even a libertarian in the sense of the platform that the Libertarian Party always had, because I've always been opposed to open borders, gay marriage, polygamy, that kind of thing. They were for all that stuff. But, you know, just to get, what they call a paleo libertarian, I guess, where you want maximum freedom for the citizens, but you want, you know, national sovereignty, immigration control, that kind of thing. And all these people who have become hardcore nationalists now have not done so because, you know, they watched old World War II movies and they thought it'd be cool to be a Nazi or something like that. They've done it because, we have been pushed into a corner. Every day, thousands more people wake up, realize how disaffected they've become, how marginalized they've been made by both parties, by the entire, mainstream political spectrum and society itself, and they say, look, it's go time. We have to stand up and fight back right now, or it's over for us. You know, this fight has been going on. We're in the 13th round now, and we just realized the match started.
Little light to the fire, huh?
Well, yeah, but the thing is, that's because, everybody has been, deceived, and I was deceived for years and years too. The political correctness and the cultural Marxism that is so pervasive in our society and has been for decades now, on the one hand, it keeps the average person who had, you know, the guy who has to get up and fight traffic for an hour and a half to work 10 hours and then fight traffic 2 hours to get home. And then, has 2 hours more of stuff that he has to do looking after the kids and blah, 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 all the other stuff. And just catches a little bit of Fox News or CNN or whatever it might be. It's hard for them to ever even run across any accurate information to find out what's going on. All you get are these pie in the sky tropes, you know, all this equality bullshit, all this melting pot bullshit. And so they don't even run across it. And the ones who did know, for the longest time, it has been, you would be absolutely socially stigmatized if you said anything. And now there is a new, phenomenon going on. It's been going on for a few years now, but it's a really fairly recent thing. If you hold political opinions that people don't like, if you post something on social media that people don't like, or you show up at an anti-immigration, anti-open borders, protest or rally, something like that, these people will find out who you are and they'll start calling your job. There's, some videos. One of them is from a woman who, she and her husband would go on the weekends. She's, I believe, in California, and she and her husband would go on the weekends to, anti-open borders protests. And the leftists found out who she was. And who she was some type of a licensed therapist or psychotherapist who worked with mentally ill people. And they started calling her job, trying to get her fired. And when, in a couple of days, that didn't work, these people show up in force. I mean, this is just a regular woman who just showed up to a couple of protests with poster board signs, you know. And they showed up at her work in force, protesting outside till they got her fired, and they got her husband fired, and you know, put them on unemployment and public assistance and all that. And she made YouTube videos, vlogs talking about it. And this stuff has happened to thousands of people, and it doesn't spare anybody. Just like I can't remember his name right off the bat, but the guy who was CEO of Mozilla, the guy who invented JavaScript, who was doing a really good job as CEO of Mozilla. It came out in 2012 or 2013. It might have been 2014. I mean, it's been pretty recent. But it came out that in 2010, when in California they were having the voter initiative election about whether or not to have legalized gay marriage in California, that he gave $1,000 to a political action committee that was against it. And he got his head cut off. I mean, they fired him, and they went and found a transsexual to take the job. And that was its only qualification for the job. And look what's happened to Firefox since. That thing's gone downhill, hasn't it?
A lot of things are going downhill on that.
Well, yeah.
The Goliaths are all getting ready to hit right squarely between the eyes with a big stone.
I think so too. But anyway, back to this conservative thing before we leave that topic. There have been a lot of really cool articles written about it. And let's see where I, okay, here it is. Jared Taylor at American Renaissance wrote one yesterday entitled "An Open Letter to Conservatives," and I'll link this in the post, but I'm going to just read a couple little snippets of it. Open letter to conservatives: you aren't just betraying your principles. Dear conservative, you are not alone. Like you, Eric Erickson at redstate.com, Matt Lewis at the Daily Caller, Taylor Millard at Hot Air, the blogger Ace of Spades, and Jim Harper with the Cato Institute are all squirming under the lash of this new coinage. They are squirming because a single word, conservative, lays bare the rot at the heart of your movement. American conservatism can conserve nothing if it cannot conserve the nation's founding stock. I'll put it bluntly, nothing you love will survive without white people. Do you stand for limited government and a balanced budget? Count your black and Hispanic allies. Do you admire Thomas Jefferson? He was a slaveholder who will end up on the dung heap with the Confederate flag. Do you care about stable families and the rights of the unborn? Look up illegitimacy, divorce, and abortion rates for blacks and Hispanics. Do you cherish the stillness at dawn in Bryce Canyon? When the Park Service finally manages to get blacks and Hispanics to go camping, they play boomboxes until 1 a.m. Was Ronald Reagan your hero? He would not win a majority of today's electorate. Do you love Tchaikovsky? Count the non-whites in the concert hall. Do you yearn for neighborhoods where you can leave the keys in your car? There are still some, just don't expect them to be diverse. Are hunting and firearms part of your heritage? Explain that to Barack Obama or Sonia Sotomayor. Are you a devout Christian? Muslim immigrants despise you and your faith. Do you support Israel? Mexicans, Haitians, Chinese, and Guatemalans don't. Your great festival, CPAC, is as white as a meeting of the Sons of Confederate Veterans. That's because blacks and Hispanics and even Asians don't share your dreams. You've heard the old joke, what do you call the only black person at a conservative meeting? The keynote speaker. Outreach doesn't work. You can't talk someone into loving what you love. Faith, patriotism, duty, and honor come from deeply cultural, religious, and ancestral sources you can't reach. Why do you evoke Martin Luther King when you call for a colorblind America? You know he wanted quotas for blacks. You evoke King because you think he'll help you silence blacks and liberals, but it doesn't work, does it? That's because only whites and Asians, when it suits them, even think in terms of colorblindness. Blacks and Hispanics will squeeze every unfair advantage out of you they can. At what point will they ever abandon their aggressive racial agenda? When they're the majority, just think how hard they'll squeeze your grandchildren. And there's a whole long article after that, and every bit of it's as good as what I just read. But Taylor brings up some interesting points, doesn't he, Ghost?
Yeah, he does. I mean, I've not heard a list like that in a long time, especially about the Republican Party.
Yeah. Well, the guys, you know, Taylor has been around for a long, long time. You know, he's always referred to in the press as a white nationalist and all that. And but he's a very intelligent, very educated, very reasoned man. And he's runs the New Century Foundation. They're the ones that did the study on race and crime back in around 2000, 99 or so, when it was still okay to talk about stuff like this as long as you stuck to the facts and the statistics. And, you know, they there are videos of his release and press conference of the results that the New Century Foundation had come up with that was broadcast on C-SPAN. And he used to be regularly a guest on shows like Donahue. Of course, Donahue always did everything he could to disparage him. But like I said, Taylor's been around a long time, and he's been very steady on this stuff. And he writes great articles, and that is one. And there are several other good articles on the conservative phenomenon that have come out over the last few weeks. But what do you think about that? I mean, really, because all our listeners know that you're a very reasoned person who looks at all this stuff from both sides. Do you agree with Taylor that in a United States that is minority white, that most of these traditions of Republicanism, and I don't mean party by that, I mean that with a small r, like, you know, wanting a Republican form of government, Republicanism, free speech, free religion, gun ownership, and that kind of thing is gone, right?
Well, if it's not gone, it's been watered down to where it's useless.
Well, it already
say you have the right to bear guns. It says arms, and if you want a military tank, that's arms.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely.
That's coming from the left, folks.
Yeah, you're not the left. Ghost thinks he's the left because he's an old school Union Democrat. But
I voted Republican once, and that taught me a lesson.
Well, who'd you vote for?
Somebody named Milhouse.
Well, he was a good guy.
Richard Nixon.
He was a real good guy.
He's probably the best Republican president we ever had.
He's probably the best president we've had in my lifetime.
I still admire Kennedy for what he was trying to pull. But
well, Kennedy wasn't a president in my lifetime.
Well, that shows your age.
Yeah, I'm a middle-aged spring chicken. But
y'all missed it all. I was right at the perfect age when the Beatles hit.
Yeah.
Never. That's something to remember for a lifetime.
Right. Well,
this conservative thing, it's like I say, it is fun to watch, especially where you saw Republicans or conservatives trying to tell the old line Republicans that you're on the wrong boat, folks. You know, if you want on that conservative boat, it's over here. And what you're doing is doing what your wife told you to do. Go get her somebody.
Yeah. Well, one of the funny things is I can't remember the guy's name. He had a pretty large account, and he was one of the ones that got really, really butthurt at me yesterday or the day before. His trying to say that he wasn't a conservative, his bio said, if I would just do what my wife tells me, I wouldn't be in the doghouse all the time. And I thought, oh, here we have a conservative. But yeah. Before we leave the topic, I would like, do you like limericks, Ghost?
Oh, I like them, yes.
Well, let me read you a couple of conservative limericks that they've got over here on Renegade Tribune. Conservatives have a peculiar trait. They say a brown future is our fate. They love immigration to fuck our own nation, but they demand a pure Jewish state. That's another big theme on the conservative thing is that these guys like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who are constantly cucking for Israel, they will defend Israel's Jewish demographic to the death while butt-raping the American demographic.
They don't even realize they are pawns when the whole world sees them as pawns.
Do you think they care?
They may not. They're too stupid.
Okay, here's another one. There's a cuckolded politician. He moonlights as a mortician. He's erotically thrilled as his base is killed. Burying whites is his mission. And here's another one. This politician loves Constitution. He thinks white racism is pollution. Courting every minority, using his authority, he implements the Jews' final solution.
I love that one. Huh? They're going to love that one.
Oh, yeah. Here's another one. There's a goy who promotes diversity, but this is code for his perversity. Watching cuckold porn, whites receive his scorn. Now we're a minority in every city. And here's the last one. I'll read one more and spare everybody the rest. There's an old man in the GOP. He pretends to stand for you and me. The truth he won't face, he cucked his own race, and now to Israel he must flee.
They won't have him, though.
Probably not.
They don't let Christians in over there.
Oh, they know these guys aren't really Christian. Well, everybody out there who is listening to my voice, don't forget, go to the links, download the memes, read the articles, tweet this stuff out, share it on Facebook, and every time you tweet this stuff out at a big old conservative, you make sure that you don't forget to put hashtag conservative in there. This thing has legs, I'm telling you. This is not some quick hashtag that's going to go away like hashtag Caitlyn Jenner or hashtag World Cup. This thing is here for the duration. So learn it, love it, live it, use it, and we'll be back right after this.
Truth seekers and freedom-loving Texans, HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
You're listening to HMR, Hidden Mysteries Radio, HiddenMysteriesRadio.com.
All right. Well, Ghost, I guess It'd be somewhat appropriate at this point to segue from cuckservative into a little bit of a different kind of cucking. Ghost, you ever heard of Jonathan Pollard?
But I hope everybody has.
Well, most people haven't.
He was in the news under the Bush years, too.
Yeah, but which Bush?
Younger.
Yeah, well.
The dumb one.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, he was deep in the bowels of the federal prison system during the Bush years, but.
He's always deep in the bowels of something.
Yeah, yeah.
According to Laura Bush.
Usually deep in the bowels of some sort of Israeli shill. But old Pollard, well, you tell him who he was, Ghost.
Probably the next to that married couple, the Rosenbooms, I think, Rosenbaums?
Yeah, Rosenbergs.
Bergs. Next to them, he's probably the most famous spy from Israel that's spying on the United States that we've ever had.
That's right. Now, Jonathan...
He's a criminal.
Yep. Jonathan Pollard, for the folks out there who don't know who he is, well, first of all, he's a Jewish guy, and he was an Israeli spy, and he caused one of the biggest security breaches in the history of our military, our nation. And what he did was he got lots and lots of military secrets and handed them over to the Israelis, who in turn, after, you know, they got whatever use out of the information they could get, turned around and sold the information to Red China. Now, Pollard was caught and sentenced to life in federal prison. But this last week, it was announced that he was going to be paroled after only serving 30 years. The interesting thing about this is, you know, we've got the Iran-Israel nuclear deal thing on the table that is designed to keep Israel from getting a nuke. I'm not Israel, excuse me, Iran from getting a nuke, but allow them to continue to produce power from their nuclear power plants. And, you know, it provides lots of access to international inspectors to all the plants and that kind of thing. And Israel had been very, very opposed to it, which, of course, that's always their game. It doesn't matter what it is. They're opposed to it. And the reason that they stay so opposed to it is because when it comes nut-cutting time, they weren't really all that opposed to it. They just have some conditions. They have other things they want. One of the things that they wanted on this Iran-Israel deal, in my humble opinion, was Pollard. Because, and the reason that I say that is, before anybody had even heard that Pollard was being released, they were already doing damage control. The first that you heard about Pollard being released, you had all these mouthpieces saying, we're paroling Pollard, but it's purely standard administrative stuff. Nothing to see here, Goy, and this has nothing to do with the Iran-Iraq deal. I mean, not Iran-Iraq, the Israel-Iraq deal. It has nothing to do with that. Well, I did, when I heard that stuff, I went online and did a search, and no one was asking the question to start with. Kind of suspicious, huh, Ghost?
It sounds very suspicious.
Well, now, to all the Shabbos Goyim out there, and, of course, I hope there aren't too many of you listening to our show because the butthurt will be immense. But to all the Shabbos Goyim out there who will automatically and reflexively say that he was not an Israeli agent, he was a lone actor who happened to sell the blah, 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 I want to let you hear a little bit about what the Israeli press is saying about this. This is from the Jerusalem Post. The title is, Jonathan Pollard on forthcoming release. I'm looking forward to being reunited with my wife. And it links to three stories, and the top story that they have says, 3 decades of U.S. lies about Jonathan Pollard unmasked. So apparently the Jews, now that he's being released, are trying to claim...
They call them Jews.
Yeah?
You got to use the original pronunciation. You can't. You put that J in there out of the blue.
Yeah, it's use, isn't it?
Yes, it's use.
Well, that's like
Judea.
Yeah, Judea. Yeah, it is a Latin term that the Romans applied to anyone who lived in Judea or Judea, as they would have pronounced it.
That's the name they applied to sheep herders.
Yeah?
That were busy fornicating with the sheep.
Oh, I see. Yeah, but a ewe is a female sheep, and I had been led to believe that these Asiatic desert tribesmen preferred to copulate with the male sheep. But anyway, okay, the first line in the article, right out of the box, starts with the four words, Israeli agent Jonathan Pollard.
Well, the U.S. didn't have all a bunch of lies, huh?
Well, we'd have to go through the other article, to get a real handle on that. But I don't want to expose our listeners to too much of this shilling in one dose. It can be toxic. But here's what it says. Israeli agent Jonathan Pollard will be released from prison after serving 30 years of a life sentence on November 20th, the U.S. Parole Commission announced Tuesday. The Parole Commission relayed the decision to Pollard's lawyers, Elliot Lehner and Jacques Simmelman. Justice Minister Ailet Shaked was also told and broke the news on Twitter. Quote, I am looking forward to being reunited with my beloved wife, Esther. Pollard's, isn't that ironic? Esther. Pollard said through his attorneys, I would like to thank the many thousands of well-wishers in the United States, in Israel, and throughout the world, which provided grassroots support by attending rallies, sending letters, making phone calls to elected officials, and saying prayers for my welfare. I am deeply appreciative of every gesture, large or small. Pollard's lawyers say that they are grateful and delighted that their client will be released soon. Quote, the decision to grant parole was made unanimously by the three members of the Parole Commission, who make their decisions independently of any other U.S. government agency. The decision is not connected to recent developments in the Middle East. Had Pollard's parole been denied, he would have been required to serve an additional 15 years in prison. His parole hearing took place July 7th at the Federal Corrections Center in Butner, North Carolina, where he's been incarcerated. And this is one of the ones that they refer to as Club Fed, one of the places where they had the golf course and the racquetball courts and all that, where he's been incarcerated. He has been serving a sentence of life in prison for conspiracy to deliver classified information to the state of Israel. The lawyers wrote that after Pollard's first parole hearing last July, in which parole was denied, the Parole Commission told them that even though a life sentence at the time of Pollard's sentencing was 45 years, a record review would take place to assess whether, in the Commission's discretion, he should be released on parole at the two-thirds mark of the 45-year term on November 21st, 2015. In the review, the commission assessed Pollard's record in prison and whether there was a reasonable probability that he would commit any further crimes if released. The lawyers submitted documents demonstrating that Pollard had an exemplary prison record and that there was no possibility that he would commit any further crimes if released. Now, isn't this something? Now, Ghost, you remember Zbigniew Brzezinski, right?
Yeah, and I remember Vanunu also.
Yeah. Well, Brzezinski was Secretary of Defense under Carter, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Well, Brzezinski, at the time this happened, said that this was the worst violation of our national security through this type of leak in history. And he said unequivocally that hundreds of lives of our operatives in Europe and Asia had been lost specifically because of the information that Pollard passed along. Now, if a person, let's say, just a regular poor subhuman goy like you or I, does something, just say through negligence, that costs one person their life, like say you got drunk and got out in the car, and you ran over somebody, and they give you 60 years in prison, you're going to serve it. If they give you life in prison, you're going to serve it. And they will tell you that the law is the law and there's nothing they can do about it, that you're not eligible for parole for 40 years. And so in 2055, we'll talk to you about parole. But until then, our hands are tied. But somehow, this guy who committed treason to the United States, who was a spy for the Israeli government with a security clearance in the United States, who caused the deaths of all these operatives, who caused no telling what amount of damage in military secrets getting out, he magically gets released 15 years before he's eligible for parole, at the same time that suddenly Israel flip-flops on whether or not they'll accept this agreement. And it makes me wonder what else, what other little goodies that Israel might have gotten out of this.
He hadn't done any worse than McCain.
Well, elaborate.
Well, I mean, McCain turned over state secrets, too.
Well, sure he did.
But he did nothing to save the U.S.
Well, wait, though, for the sake of the listeners, tell them what you mean that McCain turned over state secrets.
He was telling anything, he's telling North Vietnamese anything they wanted to know that he might have known about, so he could get the steak and potatoes while his buddies down there were getting the gruel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he would also snitch on them every time they would have plans to escape.
This is the danger. You know, we're talking about not even related to this particular issue, but this is the danger of having people that claim dual citizenship in this country. And there's none more dangerous than those that claim dual citizenship with Israel.
Well, you know, no one, and I mean absolutely no one, who claims or is eligible for any type of dual citizenship, not only, I mean, it goes without saying that they shouldn't have some kind of a national security clearance, but they shouldn't be serving as judges, politicians, any of that.
Oh, they shouldn't even be serving lunch.
No. And, you know, I guess I can link to it again. There's an article that I've linked to before that I have over on Asendor.com called My Answer to the Jewish Question. And so I guess I can link that. It has a lot of background material and some videos that you can look at to see just exactly how bad the Zionist influence on our nations is, and you know, that it's a pattern that repeats itself. But at any rate, so Pollard's getting released. The Israelis consider him a big hero. And Congress is talking about massively upping their military aid, Israel's military aid, as part of the package to get Israel to sign off on the nuclear agreement. Does this add up to you, Ghost?
No, nothing's adding up to that.
Yeah.
Especially off that. This is just unheard of after what we put up through with that girl, her name is Corey, I think.
Oh, Rachel Corey, yeah.
And the USS Liberty, and then we have to put up with this crap, too.
Yeah. For the listeners, Rachel Corey was a, what was it called, an activist, pro-Palestinian?
I don't know what she was. I think she was a volunteer for a... like the Peace Corps, like that.
Oh, okay. But she was over there in Israel, and she saw the oppression that the Israelis and the Israeli government was putting on the Palestinians. They're in violation of international law, in violation of all the agreements that we have with that we've had with them since 1948. Just as a direct. Big glob of saliva into the face of just about every president we've had who has insisted that they stop doing it. They keep building new settlements in Palestinian areas. And when they do, they'll go in there and with no notice, the army will show up at a Palestinian's house, whether it's a Palestinian urban area or as in the site where Corey was killed, a Palestinian farmhouse. they'll show up with a bulldozer and they'll tell everybody inside, you've got 5 minutes. You're allowed to leave with whatever you think you can carry. And they bulldoze the house down. Well, Rachel Corey had seen enough of it. And there is video of this stuff, and I'll post it tonight.
This fine German boy I start thinking about Holocaust, I have to think about Germany.
Yeah, I believe Corey's an Irish name.
But that fine Jew boy just had to run her over.
Yeah, he ran her right over with his bulldozer, killed her right on video. And here's another thing. Just a few weeks ago, the Israeli courts ruled that the soldiers did nothing wrong.
Miss Corey's parents are not too thrilled with Israel.
No, and anybody who cares about human rights is not thrilled with Israel. Anybody who cares about the national sovereignty of just about every nation on earth except Israel doesn't care for Israel. And that leads us into a friend of mine on Twitter linked me this last night, and I thought, man, oh man, here is one of the touchstones. This is a really, really good footnote to history right here, that anyone who's interested in the whole Israel-Palestine question, or the narrative of world Jewry, however you want to put it, should be familiar with this. It said that this is an article from Reuters that was posted August 20th, 1925. Zionists want 2 million pounds. Congress resolution. The Zionist Congress today adopted a resolution in favor of the establishment of a loan of 2 million pounds, which you have to take into account out there, folks. 2 million pounds was a King Midas fortune back in 1925. I mean, if you had today's money in the equivalent spending value of 2 million pounds in 1925, you'd probably have something like $100 billion. Anyway, the Zionist Congress today adopted a resolution in favor of the establishment of a loan of 2 billion pounds to be floated under the auspices of the League of Nations for Palestine and the establishment of industrial banks there. It is now little more than 4 years since Palestine was handed over by the military authorities to the civil administration under Sir Herbert Samuel, who was succeeded by Field Marshal Lord Plummer. On the policy of the Balfour Declaration hinges the whole question of the Jewish and Arab controversies. The wording of the British Mandate is of an elastic nature, which enables its vision to be carried out to the extent and in the manner approved by the mandatory power, and is sanctioned by the League of Nations. The terms are such that they can be modified according to circumstances, as the situation demands, without in any way departing from the general lines of action indicated. According to the Zionist view, the Balfour Declaration provides for the conversion of Palestine into a national home for the Jews, rather than merely assuring the establishment in Palestine of a national home for Jewish people. The Zionists, states an American paper, either fail to realize that the Jews are merely a minority in the country, or, realizing this fact, want to convert this Jewish minority into a majority by unlimited immigration of an indiscriminate nature. The Arabs are opposed to the national home policy and to the setting up of a constitution supporting that policy. This they clearly showed by boycotting the elections for the Legislative Council in 1923. Palestine needs stability. Until this is assured by the mandatory power, the different factions can never settle down to accept any situation. They must know how far they can go and what is going to be demanded of them. Then they will be more ready to make the sacrifices necessary for the peace and prosperity of the land as a whole. Now, Ghost, you know what the first thing that jumps out at me from that is? It is that they want the money to establish industrial banks. And they got the money, and they established the industrial banks. They established their industrial banks on money that wasn't theirs, that came directly from the City of London.
The depositors there.
Yeah. Tell the folks as quickly as you can, you're the expert on this, Ghost. Tell them what the City of London is.
City of London is 1 mile squared territory in the middle of the city, which is dedicated basically to the Jewish banking system.
Yeah.
It's almost a city-state within the city.
It's and if that city-state had an emperor, would his name be Rothschild?
Netanyahu.
Right. Well, hey, you know, just as an interesting aside before I make my point about these banks, did you know that the equivalent of Capitol Hill, you know, the huge, lavish edifice that houses the Knesset, or however you say it, you know, the Jewish parliament? Mm-hmm. Rothschild paid for that. He owns, the family owns it.
Nice.
Yeah. But anyway, to get back to the thing about the banks, like I said, the Jews established these industrial banks in Palestine wholly on money from the City of London, from the bankers there. And this precisely fits into the plans laid out by the protocols, and it shows you how this plan is carried out generation after generation in a linear fashion that never wavers. It's a very powerful plan. It takes hundreds of years to establish, and we're in the end game of it right now. What happened here is, before they had the State of Israel, the international Jews, the bankers, etc., went around to all the Western countries, agitated for generations for the establishment of central banks. Starting in the 1800s, they took over the Central Bank of Great Britain, which was the biggest power on earth at the time, perhaps the biggest power on earth ever. It's debatable, but the British Empire was really something. Then in 19...
Brought down by the bankers, too.
Absolutely. And then in 1913, they, through subterfuge, they managed to have established in the United States the central bank known as the Federal Reserve, which they control and have always controlled. I mean, can anybody here name a single, or anybody listening, name a single non-Jewish head of the Federal Reserve in their lifetime, if ever? I think there may have been one or two since 1913. But so they established these central banks that control the issuance of currency and the setting of interest rates, and they charge interest on your money. And what I mean by they charge interest on your money is that the bankers who own the Federal Reserve, which thanks to people like Ron Paul, most everybody now knows that the Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express. It's a completely private entity. They charge interest on your money before you get it in your pocket. The interest has to be paid to them. They get paid money just to make up fake money out of thin air. Then they take those proceeds and they use them to agitate for decade after decade for their own Zionist Jewish ethnostate in Palestine. Now, once they got that Jewish ethnostate in Palestine, or even before they got it, they were funded by the monies of those international bankers from the City of London through the ill-gotten gains over generation after generation of charging us interest on our money, they're flush with all our money and they pour it into those banks. And the Jews with their banks are more dangerous and more deadly than the enemy with all his armies. That's exactly what Thomas Jefferson said. He said, if we ever allowed the establishment of a central bank in the United States, that their descendants, which is us, would find themselves enslaved on the continent their forefathers conquered. Now, has this not happened, Ghost?
It has happened.
Yeah. Once the Zionist,
pays attention.
Once the Zionist international Jew gets his banks into your country, they immediately begin to destroy. And it's one of the hardest things in the world to root out. Andrew Jackson made it his life's mission to root out the original central bank. And it damn near killed him doing it. And years after he was president, when he was on his deathbed, a family member, I believe, asked him, what is your greatest accomplishment? And these, I believe, if memory serves, were his dying words. He said, I broke the bank. And what you're looking at going on around you in the world today, if you, no matter what the issue is that you're worried about, where everything seems upside down, nothing makes sense. Everything that used to be good is now considered evil. Everything that used to be considered evil is now considered hip. On the vast majority of that stuff, if not in whole, at least in a large measure, you can trace it all right back to these bankers, can't you, Ghost?
Oh, yeah. Their money has financed every political change that they wanted in the United States and the world probably for, well, probably the past 100 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah, more than that, if you're not counting just the Federal Reserve.
They were the ones that brought Napoleon down.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been a lot more. Mayor Rothschild was the one that did that. He had the most sophisticated spy and communication network all throughout Europe, all over the world, really, back then. That's Nathan Mayer Rothschild. Google that sucker. He had carrier pigeons, which were a new thing. They had learned how to train these carrier pigeons to carry messages. And now remember, this is almost 100 years before World War One, when that was still the best technology for quickly sending information. And when Wellington defeated Napoleon at Waterloo, Rothschild got the word first. And he used the papers that he had bought to print stories that were a lie, that said Wellington had lost and Great Britain was doomed. The stock market crashed overnight. Then Rothschild bought up everything in Great Britain at pennies on the dollar. Then a day or so later, the actual news caught up that Wellington had won. The British economy rebounded, soared, and Rothschild was the most wealthy man on earth and still is. They say the Rothschild family is worth over something like $500 trillion. I mean, that's an ungodly sum of money. There's no way to imagine a sum of money like that. And all of this stuff is done through subterfuge, trickery, etc. And this is one of the things that we talked about in one of the first shows that we did, The International Jew, where we discussed Henry Ford and the books that had been put together from the articles in the Dearborn Press, which was his newspaper, that they used this money to spread it around amongst their fellow Jews. So, in a very organized way for them to buy up the media, to buy up judges, to buy politicians, to buy tons of stock in big corporations until they've got enough stock owned among various Jewish individuals that they can vote their own, they can just stack the whole board of directors, with their fellow Zionist Jews. And we've seen all this happen. And we're in the, like I said, we're in the end game of it now. Ghost, I've been going rambling on about this for quite a few minutes now, and
that sounds good to me.
Well,
if you'd been wrong, I'd have said something.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. Elaborate a little bit for us, though. You know a lot more about this stuff than I do.
Well, I've read up on it, and I don't know that. I say, don't know if people even care anymore because I've got to that point where, you know, we've known about this. I've known about this for 40, 50 years, and all my arguments and trying to fight the system to get rid of their. The hangman's noose they've got around every white person's throat, actually, if not everybody's throat, has comes to no good. Nothing is changing.
Yeah.
I don't see it changing in the rest of my lifetime.
Right.
But somebody's got to wake up, and it starts in Britain, and put an end to that rule.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the rule even comes out of Britain anymore. That's one of the points I was going to make. That, you know, this tree that I'm trying to describe here has so many branches on it.
I know, but that's the root source.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's still where tons of the wealth comes from. But from all the research that I've done and all the stuff that so many of my great friends on social media and out here in the real world and all have shared with me, you know, I've done a lot of studying on this stuff. Well, the establishment of the State of Israel was so important because – before that, you know, the stuff would get run out of Great Britain. It would get run out of the central banks like the Federal Reserve in America. And once they had the State of Israel established with its giant industrial banks, now you had the Jewish power centralized. And all the programs, every order that came out of it, every new directive, every new activity and policy that has to be enacted to keep the thing moving forward are all centrally directed out of Tel Aviv now. And that's one of the reasons we find ourselves in such a stranglehold. But, you know, they've bought up the media. They've bribed all our politicians. They have control of the judiciary.
They own the election polls now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A die ball. They sure do. And they have taken over our Homeland Security surveillance state system. You know, the best example of that's Michael Chertoff, you know, who was the director of Homeland Security, who pushed through this thing where we were going to have all the everybody going to the airport was either going to have to basically get fondled or walk through a backscatter radiation X-ray machine. And he got all that done right before he left office. Then guess what his next job was? CEO of the company that exclusively sells all those X-ray machines. I mean, it's just unbelievable the way.
Your face now. It's not even hidden.
No.
Same with Frank Dodd, who I think Dodd retired, went straight to working for the bank.
Yeah. No, it's a revolving door. And that's one of the things, the way that they had this stuff set up. If you're a politician and, you rise to any type of prominence, you know, people always wonder how these jackasses like Lindsey Graham and John McCain can say and do and vote for the things that they do because, you know, don't they worry about getting reelected? No, they don't worry one bit about getting reelected because the Jews own the media and they can sway the elections through the media. That's why the Jews love pure democracy so much, because they own the media, and they can use that media to sway an election any way they want. The reason that there's so much for every kind of democracy there is because the more football fans, the more homeless people, the more junkies, the more borderline retarded people that they can find or that they can get enfranchised to vote, the more immigrants that they can move in here and get them the right to vote, the easier it is to control the elections through the mass media. So they have the whole thing tied up on that end. And if one of their stooges does take it too far and gets run out of office, he doesn't care because that's when the real good times begin, because they own all these giant corporations that do all this government contracting, and their stooges will be rewarded with a lucrative and cushy position at one of those corporations, or as a highly paid lobbyist for one of those corporations.
Like Muhammad said, they are reptiles.
They are indeed reptiles.
Thank you, Muhammad, for pointing that out.
I think in addition to being reptiles, I think they may be an ancient cult of aliens or something. I don't know. Now, I want to make...
They are the master race, of course. That's what they're declaring.
Yeah. That, well, you know...
So they didn't object to Hitler because he's killing... Jews, they rejected him because he was usurping their master race status.
Yeah, well, you know, you remember Menachem Begin, don't you?
I vaguely remember him getting shot.
No. That wasn't Menachem Begin. That was Anwar Sadat.
Anwar Sadat was president of
Egypt.
Egypt got shot.
Yes.
Menachem Begin got killed out.
Begin died of old age. Begin was the prime.
He was shot at the streets, though.
Maybe. But yeah. Menachem Begin was the prime minister of Israel in the 70s.
During the peace treaties under Carter.
Camp David Accords. That's right. And during the Camp David Accords, Menachem Begin made a really, really profound statement that perfectly explains how the... Jews see themselves in contrast to the rest of us. He said, we Jews are the master race. And I don't have the quote right in front of me, so I'm going to paraphrase it. He said, we Jews are the master race. Compared to the lesser races, we are gods and they are cockroaches. And he went on to refer to all the goyim as human excrement, with no purpose on earth other than to serve the master race of Jews. But, you know, that I'm arguing on social media or who comes into the comment sections of one of my websites where I've written an article about, national sovereignty, white genocide, any of that kind of stuff. They always want to, right after they say Nazi, they always want to throw these canards at me like, oh, you just want your pure Aryan master race and all that stuff. Well, you know, all this, master race and all that, that's not anything that was ever actually said in the Third Reich as any type of official policy. That stuff comes from the Hollywood movies, and we know who makes those. And then whenever you go and you find actual quotes from real people who have used the term master race, it always turns out to be some type of a Jewish leader, whether it's a rabbi or a politician or whatever it is. I mean, you know, that's one thing people have got to wake up to. All this stuff that Europeans, people of European descent, all this mud that we have slung on us by Hollywood and the mainstream media is precisely the stuff that they do, and that's why they think it up. You know, they accuse us of everything they do. They accuse us of being these horrible racists who don't want any immigration. But I can show you 100 videos of Israelis in the streets of Israel, beating African immigrants, chasing them out, calling them niggers, telling them go back to Africa. Which goes back to the thing that we were talking about in the first segment, that when the cucks cuck for Israel, the cuckservatives, when they cuck for Israel, what they're doing is they're saying that they'll lay their life down to defend the Jewish demographic of Israel, but they won't do anything to defend their own demographic in their own home country. As a matter of fact, they'll do everything they can to work against it. And, you know, I'm glad that the show got off on the second topic got off onto this, because, you know, I just realized how intertwined the two are.
They've created this tangled mess, and it may be that's out of their control. It's going faster and faster and faster. It's going to spin out of their control.
Well, that's always been what's happened to them. You know, they've been kicked out of 109 countries.
I remember Rome did it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Rome, you couldn't kick anybody out of Rome back then because it was the whole world, but they sure kicked them out of Jerusalem. Yeah. They kicked them out of Israel.
France got stuck with most of them.
Yeah, but France has kicked them out more than once. Great Britain's kicked them out like six times. And yeah. Just every country, like I said, they have literally been kicked. I have some graphics and some videos that just list one after the other after the other after the other of the countries they've been kicked out of, why they were kicked out, what year it was, how many times each country did it. And the crazy thing about that stuff is, you know, you'd expect a Jew to say this, but evangelical Christians and mainstream people with mainstream politics, whether they're right or left, you show this stuff to them, and you know what they say, Ghost?
No, what?
Well, they've been kicked out of 109 countries. It's everybody's fault but the Jews.
Of course.
You know, and my response to them is, yeah, well, if a friend of mine came to me one Saturday morning and he said, and I said, how was your evening? And he said, oh, it was pretty bad. Well, what happened? Well, I got kicked out of a bar last night. I said, oh, well, why'd they kick you out? He said, well, there was no reason at all. They were just assholes. They accused me of something I didn't do. Well, if he said that, I'd be inclined to believe him. But if I asked him how his night was and he said not too good, and I asked why, and he said, well, I got kicked out of every bar in town last night. And I said, well, what were you doing? And he said, nothing. They were all assholes. I'd tell him, bullshit, you did something. You know? I mean, people have got to shake off this Judaic hypnotism. They really do.
Well, the word Judaic Christianity and its source of in American history is totally bogus to begin with.
Oh, absolutely.
Then, of course, the Christians pick up on the meme that that Israel Jews give them to speak from. They're on the same choir book printed by the Israel.
Yeah, and I'm not going to get into the whole thing about the Schofield's notes and all the other stuff and the what's it called, Novus Ordo, in the, what was it, 58, where they basically took control of the Catholic Church and all that. But that's one of the things that they have definitely taken over, and that's another one of the protocols, is to subvert and control the religion of the host country. And I use the term host country purposely because they're parasites. They absolutely are. They're one of the few parasites on earth or anywhere that is absolutely so parasitic that it doesn't care if it kills its host. But yeah, they always, when they start really winning, their hubris always overtakes them and they push it too far. And there are lots of good examples about this.
1943 in Germany, for one?
Well, for one. But you look around at the stuff that's going on now, you look at the Zuckerbergs, the Edelmans, the Koch brothers, the
Donahues.
Yeah, on and on and on. They've really gone overboard with this stuff. And like I say, we don't have time to talk about it. The show has already gone way over probably what our listeners are interested in hearing. No, really, I hope this has been interesting. I've sure enjoyed sharing a lot of this stuff with you. But yeah, they always push it too far. And then when the victims fight back, like the old Polish proverb says, only the Jew cries out in pain as he strikes you. You know, it's almost a rapist mentality, isn't it, Ghost?
Well, yeah, but it's very poetic justice for him.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, but the mentality of these international Jews, it is really a rapist mentality because, you know, like the rapist grabs some girl off the sidewalk, drags her into an alley and rapes her. And you're like, how dare you force yourself on a woman like that? And he said, well, it was her fault. She was wearing short shorts, you know, or something like that. You know, well, it's your fault, Goy. You built such a rich, wonderful society full of things that we desire, and you were nice to us. It's your fault, Goy. But I think, what do you think, Ghost? Is this a good stopping point?
It's a good stopping point for the evening. It's nearly midnight here.
Yeah. Yeah, and we got to get this thing posted by one or we're going to be tardy, and we don't want another tardy slip. So in the next few days, I'll be posting a few articles both to this site, HiddenMysteriesRadio.com, and to Asmador.com, A-Z-Z-M-A-D-O-R.com. And I'll tweet out links to all my followers. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. I hope everybody feels a little bit enlightened. And I hope I didn't make too many horrible, horrible factual errors, because I'm not sitting here with the World Jewish Encyclopedia and the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion in front of me. I'm just trying to remember as much of this stuff as I can. So check out Asmador.com. Check out our other shows here at HiddenMysteriesRadio.com. If you're interested in some of the stuff that sometimes occupies the great mind of the mighty Ghost, check out Hidden Mysteries News and Views. What's the website there, Ghost?
HiddenMysteries.net.
HiddenMysteries.org.
It's got something like 60,000 articles archived.
There you go. And, boy, it's a lot of different kind of material. There's definitely, if you have an inquiring mind, there's definitely a lot of stuff there that you'll like. Most importantly, go check out HiddenMysteries.com, because HiddenMysteries.com is the greatest repository of knowledge posted online for you to buy books from in the history of the universe. Isn't that right, Ghost?
Oh, it is. I don't think anybody else can compare the number of titles we reprinted.
Right? Oh, yeah. Some of the most beautiful and informative historical reprints. And you've got a pretty good catalog of titles that people who are interested in the stuff we've been talking about tonight, the Jewish question, that kind of thing, you've got a good number of titles on that stuff too. You got the Protocols, you've got Jews Must Live, you've got Benjamin Friedman's books,
International Jew by Henry Ford.
International Jew by Henry Ford. Oh, a beautiful set that Ghost makes of those. And you offer all that stuff in regular and large print too, right?
Most of it.
Most of it. I know
all of them large.
The International Jew you do, right?
Yes.
And you also, for people who are concerned, you know, about their budget, you also offer, what is it, a 5 or 6 volume set or an abridged version?
Well, the 6 volume set includes the abridged version also.
Oh, okay. Okay. And you can also just buy the abridged version.
That's just the thumbnail of the whole set.
Right. Basically the cliff notes.
Right.
Well, everybody, please check that site out, because we're not charging subscriptions. We're not begging for donations. And HiddenMysteriesRadio.com is powered by HiddenMysteries.com. So go check them out. I hope everybody has a great week. Everybody stay on the Cuckservatives, and we'll see you when we see you.
You're listening to HMR, Hidden Mysteries Radio, HiddenMysteriesRadio.com.